Speaking on this program is Franklin Kemp.
Sometimes I think in our study of the Bible, because of a failure to have the knowledge of the background of some things that we're studying, we lack an appreciation for them. I think that's especially true about the Psalms. This morning I talked about Psalms 1, which is an introduction to the book. Next Sunday I want to talk about two Psalms, one Sunday morning and one Sunday night. But I think in order for us to appreciate those Psalms, we need to know something about the background of them. And as I mentioned this morning, the book of Psalms gives us an account of the experiences that people were going through, how they reacted to them, where they found their strength, how they were able to handle them. And I think if we can see some specific events that were behind some of the Psalms, it will help us. And so I just want to summarize with you tonight a section from 2 Samuel. I believe I said this morning 1 Samuel. I should have said 2 Samuel. David is now king. And in chapter 13, Absalom kills Amnon, who was guilty of a grievous sin. In the first place, there is no indication that David did anything about the sin that Amnon was guilty of. He just tended to look the other way. He shouldn't have done that. But anyway, Absalom did not have the right to do what he did. Having killed Amnon, then he had to leave home. He had to run. And think about now David in this situation. A son dead. One of his own sons having taken the life of his son, and then Absalom fleeing. And during this time, David was concerned about it because he had a special attachment to Absalom. Even though he had been guilty of a grievous sin in killing Amnon and fleeing because of that sin, David longed to see him. Verse 39 of chapter 13 says, "And the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead." First report that came to David said that all of his sons had been killed. And later that was corrected to show him that that was not true. Then Joab saw how David felt toward Absalom. And he wanted to get him back. He wanted to bring about a reconciliation between David and Absalom. So he found a woman to come to David and to tell David a tale that how something had happened to her, and leading up to the fact that she is going to make the application to David. And in verse 13 of chapter 14, the woman said, "Wherefore then hast thou thought such a thing against the people of God? For the king doth speak this thing as one which is faulty, in that the king doth not fetch home again his banished." See, Absalom's away from home. David would like to have him back, but he can't bring it in his mind and heart to bring him back because, as far as he knows, there's no penitence on the part of Absalom. And that's what she said. Then verse 14, "For we must needs die, and are as water spilled on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Neither doth God respect any person. Yet doth he devise means that his banished be not expelled from here." In that, we have a wonderful principle laid down in reference to God and our relationship to Him. As a result of our sin, we are banished from God, separated from Him. But God, like David, longs for us and wants us to be back, and He has arranged as a means for His banished ones being brought back. And so the story continues. And then David said, "I'm going to let him come back." And in verse 24 of chapter 14, the king said, "Let him turn to his own house, and let him not see my face." David said, "I'm going to let him come back, but I'm not going to grant him pardon. He can't see my face. He can come back into the land." But the blessings and my presence he'll not be able to enjoy anymore. It'd be sad if God operated that way, would it not? And that God granted only a half pardon, and we'd not be able to enjoy the full blessings of God. We wouldn't, it'd be difficult to live in a situation like that, wouldn't it? But at any rate, Absalom was not satisfied, and so he got set Joab's field afire, and Joab's servants came to him, and then Absalom told him what the problem was, and then a reconciliation was brought about between David and Absalom. And in connection with this reconciliation, there was a reconciliation brought about between David and Absalom while Absalom was still impenitent. He hadn't changed his mind. He hadn't changed his life. He's still a rebellious son. He has ulterior motives in his mind. And though beginning in chapter 15 then, it gives the account of Absalom beginning to undermine his father David, who was king. And verse 1 of chapter 15 says, "It came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man had a controversy came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, What city art thou? And he said, Thy servant is one of the tribes of Israel. And Absalom said unto him, See, thy matters are good and right, but there is no man deputed to the king to hear thee. Absalom said, Moreover, Oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suitor called might come unto me, and I'd do him justice. And it was so that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel." Think about what's going on. Here David is king. If you're acquainted with the Old Testament, you know how Saul was set aside and David was made king of Israel. Now then, here's one of his own sons working, doing all that he can to overthrow David, to take away the kingdom from him. And here the people that David is over and the people that David is serving. And when somebody comes by, he said, David is really not serving you in a just way. You need somebody that will be interested in you, take care of your affairs. And through this mean, he stole the hearts of the people. And then, following that, we're told that Absalom then went to David in verse 7 and said unto the king, I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, which I vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. For thy servant vowed a vow while I abode at Geshur in Syria, saying, If the Lord shall bring me again indeed to Jerusalem, then I'll serve the Lord. And the king said unto him, Go in peace. So he rose and went to Hebron. How sad. Here's his son now. He's back. And it tells David that while I was away, I realized my mistake and I made a vow to God. If he'd bring me back, then I'd serve him, and I want to go and pay my vow. When all the time he had something else in mind. David trusted him. And so in verse 10 it says, But Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron. Announcing the fact that he's going to be king in Hebron. Laying the groundwork for his becoming king. Can you think of the tragedy of all that? Here's a man that had been selected by God to reign over Israel. And yet one of his own sons is seeking to take away from him the kingdom that God gave to him. And the place that God set him in. And so Absalom then arranges for the undermining of David to take place. David's counselor goes over with Absalom and enters into conspiracy with him. Verse 12 said, And Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor from his city, even from Giloh, while he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. So it's growing and growing. Then there comes a messenger to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. Now I want you to listen and think about what's happening. David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee, for we shall not else escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword. And so we see David then gathering his people round about him, making plans to leave the city, to get away, to see that he is not destroyed. In a way, as it were, he's abdicating his throne, all because of his son. Can you, in your mind's imagination, go back through the years? Stand where David stood and sit where David sat? King over Israel? And then walk with David as he leaves behind the throne and the city of Jerusalem, and begins to flee with the ones that will go with him, and they're fleeing for their life. Verse 19 tells us that there was a man by the name of Attai who was a Gittite, a stranger. David said, you're a stranger. You haven't been with us long. You don't need to become involved in this. You're going back. This is not your battle. But then he reminded David that wherever he went, he is willing to go with him and to be his servant. Then look at verse 23. And all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people passed over. The king also himself passed over the brook Kidron, and all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. Now try to think about what's taking place. David is fleeing for his very life. Why? Because his own son has said, I want the throne. And no doubt Absalom would have been willing to take David's life, if necessary, in order to obtain the throne. Can you imagine what kind of trial that must have been? How easy it would have been for David to have said, I'm ready to give up. I don't see any point. How can there be any future? I've done all that I know to do, and now then, here's what's happened. My own son is driving me from my throne to take it over. Here I am running. The people that are following here, can you not hear the weeping with a loud voice as the people passed over, crossing over the Kidron? Then dropping down to verse 30 of chapter 15, I read, and David went up by the ascent of the Mount of Olives and wept as he went, and had his head covered. And he went barefoot, and all the people that was with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went. Has your life ever been like that? Have you ever known such a trial as that, regardless of what you may have had in life? You've never been through anything like that, have you? I've never been through anything like that. Would I know how to react? Would I know how to maintain my faith and confidence in God? Would I throw up my hands and quit, or what would I do? How would I handle a situation like that? That's what we're trying to find out, and that's what we're going to find out next Sunday when we study two songs that were written during this period of time. And that's the reason that I'm trying to sort of give you the detailed and a summarized account of what it's all about, so that when we read those psalms, we can, in those psalms, experience with David what he's going through. And out of that, learn how to take our experiences in life and know how to use them and to be blessed through them. Listen again. dropping down to verse 25. And the king said unto Zadok, carry back the ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he'll bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. David said, I'm leaving. Carry the ark back. If God wants me to have it back, he'll bring me back. Look at verse 26. But if he thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I. Let him do to me as seemeth good unto him. Now that's the verse also you need to mark and keep in mind as we'll study the psalm next week. Now, look again. Dropping on down, verse 32. Well, let's look at verse 31. One told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsels of Ahithophel into foolishness. And it came to pass that when David was come to the top of the mount, where he worshipped God. Why? Do you see what's taking place? Fleeing from the city, his throne abdicated and left behind. His own son determined to take his throne away from him. And as he goes up the Mount of Olives, weeping, his head covered in barefoot, here we find him worshiping God. When it's told him that his best friend and his counselor has gone over to the other side, we find him with his head bowed in worship to God. Do I know how to handle life like that? Do I know how to take the problems and the difficulties of life, and when it seems as though life is crushed, to worship God like David did? That's what we need to learn, and that's what I hope that we can learn. Then Hushai came to him and wanted to go with him, and David sent him back. That tells about the rest of that. And then we come to chapter 16. When David was a little past the top of the hill, behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of asses saddled, and upon them 200 loaves of bread, and 100 bunches of raisins, and 100 summer fruit, and a bottle of wine. And he gives this to him. And then David inquires about Mephibosheth, and Ziba lies about him. He's interested in Saul being restored into the kingdom and tries to take advantage of the situation and deceive David. David doesn't know any better than to believe what a man says. Later on, David will find out that what was said was not true, but now he doesn't know any better. Then we read about a man by the name of Shimei. Verse 6, it tells us that he came forth and he cursed still as he came. Verse 6 said, and he cast stones at David and all the servants of King David and all the people and all the mighty men that were on his right hand and on his left. And thus said Shimei when he cursed, come out, thou bloody man, thou man of Belial. The Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned, and the Lord hath delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom thy son. Behold, thou art taken in thy mischief, because thou art a bloody man. That'd be tough to take, wouldn't it? Man come to a one that was king and say, it caught up with you. You got what you deserve. And then threw stones at him. And with the people that's with him. How would I react? No doubt, just like Abishai. He said, let's cut his head off. Get rid of a fellow like that. David said, don't do that. David said unto Abishai and to all his servants, behold, my son which came forth of my bowels seeketh my life. How much more now may this Benjaminite do it? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord hath bidden him. It may be that the Lord will look on mine affliction, and that the Lord will requite me good for his cursing this day. Unusual man, isn't it? Think about walking down the road and having somebody to say all kind of things about you, laughing at you, and then pick up rocks and throw rocks at you. How would I react? How would I use that? What would I do? So we pass on then to chapter 17. Absalom and his counselor then set about to try to bring an end to David and the men that he has with him. They're going to set about to enter in to battle. And in the midst of all of that, Hushai then becomes one to counsel. Because Absalom listens to him rather than to Ahithophel goes and takes his life. And then we read in verse 27 of the dire straits that they were in. Barzillai brought them something to eat, and the last verses of chapter 17 tells about it. Think about being in a situation like this, a man that was king. And here's a man out of goodness of his heart. That's a Gileadite that brings him something to eat. And then we have come to chapter 18. Things are drawing to a head. It's the day for battle. Chapter 18 tells us about David numbering his men, dividing his army into three parts and selecting captains over each part. Think about it. The day has come for battle. On one side is David and his men, and on the other side is Absalom and his army. What a day. What a day in the life of any man. What a day in the life of a king. How would he feel? How would he react? What does one do in a situation like that? And so verse 5 tells us, "And the king commanded Joab and Abishai and Attai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man." Ah, there's that still love. You can't let him go, even though he's done all this. David said, "I know what has to be done." But deal gently with him. And then the 18th chapter tells about the battle. In the midst of it, Absalom started fleeing. The record already told about his hair, and his hair become caught in a tree. Someone told Joab, and then he was killed. David's watching for the messengers. One wanted to come and bring the message, and they said, "Don't tell him." Then the second one started out, and David saw the two messengers coming. The first one came, and he said, "All things are well." And then finally the other one came and said, "He's dead." Now that's the history of a section of the life of David. The two Psalms that I want to talk about next Sunday morning relate to this period of time in the life of David. And I don't believe there's any way that we would ever appreciate those Psalms unless we knew about this period in the life of David. And if you think it's strange that I take the time that I've taken tonight to summarize for you this section of the Old Testament in order to present a lesson on two Psalms, then I hope you'll come back next Sunday morning, and I think you can appreciate those Psalms more. I think they'll have more meaning to all of us than they ever would if we had not gone back and read this account of the life of David. And in doing so, when we read those Psalms, sensing the experience out of which those psalms were written, I can learn valuable lessons that'll help me. As I pass through the experiences of life, whatever they may be, however trying they may be, I don't think that I'll ever pass through an experience that'll be more trying than the one David did. But if I can learn from David how to deal with it, to find the strength, the insight, the understanding, to come through it better, stronger, then I'll have learned a lesson that'll be well worthwhile. Still, let me encourage you to read carefully the entire section of 2 Samuel 13 through 18. Have your mind refreshed on that. I'd like to encourage you to read that next Saturday or next Sunday morning. And then be prepared for our study of two of the wonderful psalms that David wrote during that time. And if you'll do that, then together our lives will be enriched. And we'll be better prepared to deal with whatever life may bring our way. Would you be able to handle the problem of life like David did? Would you want to handle it on his own? Had you ever thought about what David would have been confronted with and the problems that would have been his if he had had to deal with that out of his own wisdom and without the insight and the understanding of God? Ah, it was dark enough as it was. But how dark it would have been David had had to walk that path alone without being able to walk hand in hand with God. As you leave here tonight, will you leave walking hand in hand with God? You don't know what tomorrow brings. Tomorrow your life may be thrown into turmoil just as it was with David. What will you do there? Where will you turn? How will you handle it? You can become a Christian tonight. And then whatever tomorrow may throw at you, then you'll have God to help, to bless, to guide, to strengthen, and direct. Do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? Are you penitent of your sins? Absalom came back impenitent. Look what he did. Because of his impenitence, he tried to wrest the throne away from his father David. That shows the danger of impenitence in the presence of sin. Are you willing to confess Christ as the Son of God? Then be baptized into Christ that your sin might be forgiven.